Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 78 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And oh boy, today we're going to be talking about her as an alpha female, how to be successful in both work and home life. Before we start, just know that this episode of HER is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review our podcast because I love to hear from you. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
Oh boy, this is going to be such a great segment. We have a brand new book out that has really gotten some buzz out there, going viral. It's called The Alpha Female's Guide to Men and Marriage, How Love Works. And this is written by Suzanne Venker, who is our guest. She's a cultural critic and the author of 5 books on marriage, relationships, and work-family balance. She's also a contributor at Fox News and at the Washington Examiner. Oh, Suzanne, welcome to the HER podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I just loved reading through this book. Now, you've got some real chunks of juicy data in here and thoughts about how this whole thing goes with alpha women and men. First of all, what the heck is an alpha woman?
Right. So I think people kind of know whether or not they fall into the category, but this is really a book about personalities. And I chose to use the words alpha and beta to describe a certain personality type. And I point people to a sort of test that you can take, a quiz that you can take to see if you fall into this category. So most people know if they're an alpha, which is basically a take charge, controlling, kind of bossy mentality. And a beta is a softer approach, you know, and you can basically use the terms type A and type B to replace those words if you don't like them. There's definitely different
Yes.
ways to describe these personalities, but this is what I chose to use because I thought it was the most recognizable, especially because we're talking
Okay.
about alpha males and the relationship between men and marriage and how this all plays out in the home.
Why did you write this book?
That's a great question. So this book is definitely mm-hmm. part memoir and part advice book, but mostly, but very much a memoir. So I grew up with a mom who was very alpha, however you want to phrase it. And it was a problem in my parents' marriage. She had to be the one in control at all times, and it caused quite a bit of conflict, affected me very deeply. I am as well an alpha, and it wasn't just my mother. I actually come from a long line of alpha females. And there is much to be said for that. This is not a knock on that personality type. What it is an understanding of how that personality works well in certain environments and how it can be problematic in others, and namely love and relationships. I think it's very difficult when you're dealing with your average guy who's, you know, basically an alpha for the most part. And they have, you know, they're born to be alphas. They have way more testosterone than we do. And so ultimately, you end up with a lot of unnecessary conflict. I certainly did in my marriage. And this was sort of a personal journey for me, as well as something that I had seen or have seen in the culture at large based on what I do and write about.
Well, how'd you work it in your own relationship, since this was a memoir? I mean, what was the,
yeah.
I hope there's a happy ending here.
Oh, my gosh. Very much so. Very much so. So the book is divided up into 10 chapters, each of which
Yes.
go through a specific, I don't know if you have them there in front of you, but each of which give a suggestion for what, you know, a different way of thinking about marriage and men and about relationships in general, and then specific tactics that you can use to bring about a better response. So the
well, I have it right in front of me, and chapter one was a great one. Wave the white flag. Now go for it. What is that about?
So that's about the fact that you don't always have to be in charge. You do not have to have the last word. You do not have to be in control. You just think you do. And the reason, there are different reasons why you might think you do. I mean, usually it has to do with your upbringing or the way you think about men and relationships and how, you know, most people when they're in control mode are really just being, they're just fearful. They think that if they let go, that something won't work out the way they want it to, or that the person, namely your husband, can't handle the situation on his own or what have you. So you feel that you have to control everything. And what I'm saying is that we lock ourselves in to this thinking that is actually detrimental to not only ourselves, but obviously to the relationship. So waving the white flag is basically just giving up control and understanding there's places and time to be in control, but in your relationship with the person that you've chosen, that you've already deemed is worthy of your love and giving your life to, should not be that person, should not be a place for that control.
Interesting. One of the things I did when I got your book was I immediately went back to the do's and don'ts for alpha females. Immediately I was just drawn to this little, you know, list of 10, which was fairly straightforward and back and forth. And, you know, it's interesting as I'm reading through, like, for instance, hope, don't expect, ask, don't demand, praise him and thank him, say yes instead of no, let him save face, be kind, don't nag. You know, it's interesting. I bet a lot of feminists out there would have a whole lot of things to say about that list. I mean,
well,
I know that you've had, well, you've had a lot of fun out there. You know, your book, The War on Men, really, you know, hit it hard along these lines as well. And you've had some rather challenging and fun and engaging you know, conversations with the media about that. So I'm being kind here. So tell me what you say to a woman who's more feminist and who reads that, you know, list and says, whoa, you know, this is like shades of the 50s. What's going on here?
Right. So again, that goes back to fear. We have lived in several decades of a very big male bashing culture and very anti-male and anti-marriage and very pro-woman and pro-girl power. So this feminist mentality certainly hasn't, you know, it may have gotten you where you want to be in the workplace, but certainly hasn't gotten us anywhere in our love lives. Marriage and relationships are certainly not better off than they used to be. We're worse off. Gender relations have never been so tenuous. So there's something that feminists don't know, in my opinion, and that's this subject. It's love, marriage, men. They don't get it. You know, the things that they're arguing for, that they believe in, just don't have anything to do with how to get along with a man, how to love a man, how to be married, how to be a wife. They're just two totally different realms, if you will. So I would answer, you know, to any feminist who wanted to pick it up, she is going to be fearful, because what I've written here is goes so much against the grain. You know, it's against what she was taught to believe. But just because you're taught something doesn't mean it's right. You know, you have to look inward into yourself and say, how's this working out for me in my personal life? You know, is this attitude that I carry with me getting me where I want to be? And if it is, and you're all, and you know, and you're happy, then just, you know, move on to the next book. But if you're not, and there's a disconnect between your professional life and your personal life, gosh, I've really got my professional life down, but I certainly don't have my love life down, what's going on? This may very well be a book you need.
Gotcha. Excellent. Okay. All right. Now, just as I'm, you know, kind of cruising through the book itself, I also see that first you're starting with waving the white flag. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, own your feminine or your inner beta. Explain that.
Right. So, you know, I think what's happened is that women have become, I guess what you'd say, overly developed in their masculine side. You know, they're trying to work with this energy that is, you know, historically what men have done to be successful in one realm of life. And they've done that, but they can't get out of it. You know, they're kind of stuck in that mode all the time, which goes back to what we said before. That may work in a certain realm. But men aren't looking, when it comes to getting married or, you know, living a long life with someone, they're not looking for another version of themselves. Men are looking for the feminine. They want the opposite of what they are, because those two work in tandem. So I have a whole section in that chapter about understanding the male-female dance and how it works in tandem and requires both a masculine and a feminine energy in order to be balanced. So if you have two feminine energies or two masculine energies, you're kind of you're offsetting the natural flow of things. So if you can become more feminine, by feminine all I mean is being softer instead of so hard, being easier instead of difficult, and being more nurturing as opposed to having to dictate, right, how things should be, then you are getting more in touch with that softer side of yourself. And you're going to find that when you do that, his response to you is so naturally phenomenal. It's so great. It's like an automatic, it's almost like you think of a battery. I've explained this before. You've got the positive and the negative end, right? When you put a positive and a negative together, it works. But if you put the two positives, the two negatives together, it doesn't work. As soon as you present that feminine energy to your guy, it's like it's a magnet for him, and he responds differently toward you. When you're combative or competitive, it doesn't work. And that's what I think we have going on in too many relationships today.
In your chapter called Learn the Dance, I want to make sure that our listeners understand, as it were, the dance. You say it's simple, really. When it comes to love, women hold all the cards. As the relationship-oriented sex or the relationship navigator, a woman has the power to steer the ship in the direction she wants it to go. The trick is to steer the ship well. What's that about?
So that's about what we were just sort of talking about, which is that to get that magnet toward you, to get that relationship going in the direction you want to be firmly grounded in your feminine. And the more you are, the more your relationship is going to work like a well-oiled machine. And the more combative or masculine you are, the less it's going to work. So it's really about being more conciliatory instead of so argumentative. For example, that's one thing that I talk in the book. I give examples of things that I did in my own relationship, for example, that were profound in terms of these are things that will work overnight. And I've had people respond to this book already and saying, I can't believe how fast this really was. It really was that quick. The need to not have the last word, the need to not have to be right. If you let go of these things that you think you need to hold on to be heard or to have this identity or to whatever it is in your mind that you feel you need to do or you've been groomed to do, you go into a receptive mode where you're allowing love and this man into your life in a very different way, and he's going to respond accordingly. So the dance is like what you do, however, whatever direction you take it in, he's going to respond. So if you're being dictatorial or argumentative or nagging, he's going to fight back because that's not what he wants. That's not natural for him. So you're going to call him defensive, and you're going to end up in a fight because he's coming back at you to save himself. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. All right. So I'm looking at this one, you know, chapter that's really interesting. It's come up in a lot of different conversations we've had on her radio. And that's the whole issue of really deciding, as it were, to stay in the relationship so that you're really kicking a divorce out of the mix in terms of an option. So you put down as an action point in this one chapter about deciding to stay. You say, by mentally removing the option to get divorced, you allow yourself to stay focused on the marriage, not get bogged down in blame or what ifs. Making the decision to stay forces your brain to create happiness with the man you've already chosen, rather than imagining a life with someone else. So get rid of the husband of your dreams, stick with reality, and shoot for contentment. Happiness is fleeting, but contentment is a permanent state. Tell us more about deciding to stay.
Right. So it's a really important piece to the puzzle, if you will. It's a little different from the other chapters because it's not a specific do this. It's more of a philosophical process of thinking about how you view marriage, because how you think about marriage itself as an institution, irrespective of you and your husband specifically, is very important. If you think mentally in your mind the way the culture sort of teaches us to think, which is that, oh, you can always get divorced, then you will actually create a self-fulfilling prophecy because you think of that as an option. So it's more of a mental shift, obviously, when ever locked in. But the trick is to pretend like you are, because, and I did the research on this, and I have some quotes from psychologists in that chapter that talk about that the idea that the very option of being allowed to change our minds creates the option to change our minds. Whereas psychologically, if you feel stuck, which sounds bad on the surface, actually it works to your benefit. Because if you think, and you can kind of compare this to something else. Let's say you want to get out of a situation. Let's say it's not a relationship problem, but some issue you have, and you want to get out of it. If you have no way out, or you think you have no way out, the way you approach it, and that you're probably is going to be very different, and you're going to probably come up with that means to make it work more so than if you think you don't have an option. So it actually kind of can work in your life overall, but it's just a real important mental shift. And that, you know, you're so, when you hear about affairs, or when you hear about people wondering, is this all there is, and all that stuff, it ceases to be a problem for you personally in your life because you don't think along those lines. You don't allow your brain to think along those lines. You stay focused on the relationship you have, and you're committed to making it work. So it's just all about your mental state.
Well, it's reframing everything and kind of going to that place, which I really think is incredibly important here. When you talk about stop saying no, what do you mean by that? No, no, no. You keep saying no.
And this may or may not apply to you or the person listening, but for me, no was a pretty popular word with me, I guess. I didn't really think of it that way. I don't think of myself as a no person, but certainly as a mother, you know, I compare the two, that, you know, saying no as a mom could be a very good thing to put boundaries for your kids, right? But then you don't want to shift over and say no to your husband because he's not looking for a no, and he doesn't need a no because he's not a kid. So I think it was more of a natural response of mine, but it's not really just the word. So I explained in that chapter about how there's so many different ways you can say no without actually saying the word. So, for example, let's say my husband says something and I think something different than what he said, I would immediately shoot him down and say, well, no, it's really this. Or whatever it is I'm doing, I'm contradicting everything he said just for the sake of, well, either because I did think he was wrong, right? Or because I just for the sake of argument, whatever it was, that was my natural way. And when I finally stopped and got that out of my system, which took a while, the saying yes or saying nothing, either one is much better than no. The receptivity on his part was enormous. And then the whole environment in the room changed. And of course, there was no conflict, which is, we all want less conflict, right? It was just a win-win. And it just took me a long time until I finally got out of that natural no kind of mode and understood how powerful the word yes can be. And again, you can apply this not just to your relationships, but just across or not just a relationship with your husband, but just across the board. People are much more responsive to yes than they are to no.
Well, I like the what you also said in the chapter about just the fact that, and he doesn't want your opinion nearly as much as he wants your sympathy, and that great quote from Carnegie, 3/4 of the people you ever meet are hungry and thirsty for sympathy. Give it to them, and they will love you. And I think that that's, you know, I think a lot of people, whether male or female, really find that, you know, it's exceptionally important, you know, to be right, to just be right, to say, hey, no, this is the way it goes. I don't agree, or back and forth. And there always has to be a no in there. No, that's not exactly perfect or exactly right. Maybe, you know, just sort of reframing it and saying it a little bit differently is kind of where it's at. Suzanne, this has just been a fantastic discussion. I just love it. I want to make sure that everyone out there knows the name of the book is The Alpha Female's Guide to Men and Marriage, How Love Works, and that we've been talking with Suzanne Venker, who is the author, and she's also the author of a number of really hot books. One was, and a lot of people knew Suzanne's best-selling ebook, The War on Men, which, boy, did that garner a lot of attention. And I think a lot of this also segues with the new book, which is also part memoir, so you can get a chance to know Suzanne a little bit better. Speaking of which, go to her website at Suzanne, that's S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Venker, V as in Victor, E-N-K-E-R.com to learn more about her wonderful work. Suzanne, I want to thank you for being on the Her podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. And keep up the marvelous work.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone. Great segment, Suzanne. Everyone, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes, because we love to see that rating and read the review as well. Your feedback is golden to us. And I love to read it too. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.